White Sox fans, guess what? We are right back at you during what seems to be now Bad Vibes Week here at Southside Sox. Oh, every week isn't Bad Vibes Week. Stop that. You're listening, so it can't be that bad, right? This is Southside Sox Mothership Podcast number 72. It's a Carlton Fisk episode we have. We're mostly going to be playing off of Rick Hahn's performance at the GM meetings, whatever they're called now, owners meetings, whatever it is. Nothing shocking, but still stuff worth talking about. And maybe we'll even see sunshine poking through the clouds somewhere. I don't know. I challenge all four of you to do that with me tonight. It is our latest, or maybe our foremost, or maybe our premier t-shirt designer and offbeat writer. It is Adrian Serrano with us once again. He doesn't miss many. I'm digging that. Speaking of not missing many, representing the entirety of the Indianapolis field office, it is once again Crystal O'Keefe. Welcome. A delicious treat from Sharing Socks. We stole them. We might just steal them because his son is off like being a director or something. Lee Allen, welcome. Good to have you back. Speaking of offbeat writers, thank you for being with us. And Zach Hayes, I think, Zach, you are now, you're the Darren Black of the major league team. I think actually, if anybody's watching, if you look through that doorway behind him, me and Zach, we're also actually roommates. So Zach, turn the speakers down. I'm getting some reverb coming from you, but Zach is with us all the time too. And you know, again, thanks for taking the time for this half hour, 45 minutes. Let's get right to Rick Hahn. An interesting, inauspicious offseason debut, I suppose. He has spoken on some topics. They seem to be somewhat spoon-fed from a very select amount of media who has access to Rick Hahn. Not us. And let's just kick off with Carlos Rodon. The White Sox, as everyone knows, had declined to offer what seemed to be the absolute no-brainer decision of the offseason, make a qualifying offer to Carlos Rodon. with terrific timing that didn't resemble any sort of crotch kick whatsoever to Rick Hahn. Today, I believe Scott Boras at the owner's meeting, in between his little cute sound bites, made it very clear that Carlos Rodon, whether he gets one or not, is aiming for a multi-year contract, which means it was truly, absolutely a no-risk, no-brainer decision to make a qualifying offer to Carlos Rodon, a 5-WAR pitcher in 2/3 of a season. Because as Scott Boras, Carlos Rodon's mouthpiece at the moment, said he would have rejected that qualifying offer, which is his right. It doesn't matter if he ends up getting 5 years and $100 million or he gets no offer at all. He rejects it. The White Sox get a draft pick. So apparently to Rick Hahn, the draft pick has no value. Carlos Rodon, I got to say, does not have much value at all. He's angling. He was gambling that Rodon's going to be worth maybe $9 million for 2022. I'm assuming everyone here shakes their head at the decision, but let's just get some thoughts on what has happened with arguably, well, certainly our ace southpaw and a guy who really put in an extraordinary season for the White Sox and now has been kicked swiftly in the pants.
So at first, when Rick Hahn declined the option, I kind of got the vibe that maybe they thought the market was going to be a little bit lower on Rodon and they were going to try to wait it out and maybe still negotiate. After his comments now, I kind of feel like they know what he's worth and they decided that Rick was given his amount of money that he can spend this offseason and he wasn't going to be able to afford both Rodon and the other people that are on his list of targets. So it's kind of like was a necessary decision he had to make, but he got targets in mind and he's going to go try to get them. But Carlos wasn't going to be able to be also afforded, you know, at whatever the price would be, 18 or plus.
Again, people aren't always watching. I want everyone to know that Adrian, when he just said the other things on Rick Hahn's wish list, he did not use air quotes. He could have, he did not use air quotes. Okay. The other three of you, thoughts on this initial start.
If you look at what the predictions are by the experts, not by us, but by the guys who do this for wait all year to do this, basically, yeah, and make the big bucks. The prediction, I saw one at 1 year and 12 ago, but the others were 125, 345, 575, and on up the line. And then the teams where he'd be be interested. Houston, Texas, the Angels, the Tigers. I just saw one today for the Twins pushing it. The best job, and I think better than we've ever done, anybody I know has ever done, in analyzing Rodon, because health is the question, of course, was done by an SB Nation guy for the Mariners. A brilliant piece where he took video of Carlos for the last, I don't know, 6 years or so, with every change in the way that he was pitching, and demonstrated on the last one the great job that has been done this past year that Katz did this year with getting him to use more body and drill through with his legs and hips, so that the strain on his arm that had him injured so many times over the years should be alleviated. Any pitcher can get hurt in any 5 minute period. But it was a really solid argument. This guy wanted the Mariners to take him. Really solid argument for why the health issues aren't what they were before. And you know, maybe the Sox have an MRI showing that he's got three fractures going down his left arm. But unless that's the case, somebody should have been doing the homework that this writer for Seattle did, because he did a great job.
Yeah, in the words of one of the great artistic luminaries of our time, DJ Khaled, congratulations, you played yourself. Like, to build on what Lee just gave us, yeah, I mean, I've been someone who's been on record as saying for quite a while now that I was not bothered by the fatigue that we saw out of Rodon in August and September, and that I for the reasons that you just gave us, is that his new mechanics were really, really good, and they are a lot different than his old mechanics. There is every reason to believe, from like an actual mechanical standpoint, that yeah, no, he's not actually, he doesn't have any structural issues with his arm. He was tired. Maybe we will find out something in the end, but it's hard to see a world in which they are vindicated for not giving him this offer in one way or another, is all I can say.
It really feels like, too, if they knew something, if this, like, you know, theory that they know more than everybody else knows, like, I don't think he would have thrown in that playoff game if he would have actually had an injury. I think they would have gone to somebody else. They would have had Dallas on the roster or something. But, like, because they were kind of waiting for him, I think it was just him being tired.
He was still hitting 98 miles an hour in the playoffs, you know, because he was ramping it up to 100%. You can't do that if you got a torn up shoulder or a torn up elbow, like, bottom line. So,
and we don't need a Ouija board to figure out that if there was something, because, well, that's been the big pushback on this. Like, hey, man, we're not the Sox. They know something. He's dead. If that was the case, how quickly would Bob Nightingale have already tweeted something out saying, well, you know, the word is that he's half dead. He's in a coma. The White Sox are hoping he pulls through and they can sign him for $6 million next year. We know that would be out there because this is important PR. The White Sox think they know how to do PR. I think they can do it better than they do it, but they're usually out in front of that. So this idea that there's some secret dossier of health about him, when, yes, a month ago we saw him hitting triple digits, okay, for a pitch for in a two-inning start that didn't work out too well in the playoffs, but it happened. You know, I don't think that was a trick. I don't think that was like some anime series I turned to instead of the ALDS. You know, I'm not sure how easily conned we're supposed to be this early in the offseason.
It also, I mean, I go back, I claim no great expertise on pitchers and their health and whatnot. I do claim that I listen to Steve Stone because I think he is an expert. And Stoney, one of many, many before the season started, was saying, you got to really watch innings on guys who are coming from the 60-game season to 162. Well, how much more do you have to watch innings on a guy who's pitched 40 innings in the last 2 years? And it was perfectly on. And then they had, at one point, was it 8 games of 100 or more pitches out of 9? And the others were at 97. They just blew him to death in May and June, up to the All-Star break, really. Just totally overworked him. It was unbelievable. And now they expect Kopech is going to be a starter next year and give him 160 innings, coming up 60 this year, without understanding the same problem. I mean, Russo is the only Hall of Fame baseball person, is the only manager who worked his starting pitchers that hard. White Sox had many more 100-plus pitch games than anybody else until Philadelphia passed up in late September. But for the most of the season, that was the case until La Russa finally gave up a little on it in September.
And Crystal,
just abuse.
And Crystal, this is something you were hammering, you know, gosh, midseason, early season. The White Sox starting health was generally okay, so it didn't necessitate pushing Kopech hard. But the idea that he never really got stretched, of course, he has time to be stretched for to get into the rotation. He has to now at this point. Yeah. We're just booting starters out left and right. But, you know, this is something you're on that's like, hey, you know, maybe he should be getting a little bit more. Let's float that trial balloon of him as a starter, maybe a little more aggressively.
Well, and the truth is neither one of them have played full seasons because they've been so injury prone. So you've got one phenomenal starting pitcher that, yeah, showed a little bit of fatigue, but again, was getting used to being back in this 162-game season. And then you have a pitcher that opted out, like didn't even play last year. And it seems clear as though Rickon does not have any interest in finding another starting pitcher. It's just Kopech is the answer. So you've got Dylan Cease and Lucas Giolito, who I guess I trust. And then you have Michael Kopech that is apparently going to be warmed up in time, which I don't believe. And then Dallas, who's just been awful. So why? What was the reasoning behind not adding someone that you were confident in all season and has finally had a full season under his belt? And just like it's mind boggling. Like, I don't even know what to say about it. You are putting your trust in five guys that can't prove that they can do anything.
Well, Crystal, don't worry. Me and Zach have worked it out. Giolito and Lynn only have to average, I think we figured, Zach, 7 1/3 innings per start, 7 2/3 innings maybe per start, to make up for all the lack of starts, maybe the lack of health.
Yeah.
That's not a big ask.
Lucas might be able to do it. Lucas, as great as he is, I don't trust him after five. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, lost in this is a lot of people got to get a lot more comfortable with Dylan Cease, like going out there in big games, because, like, you know, he didn't pitch in 2020 in the playoffs. He had a very short leash in 2021 in the playoffs. It's like, well, now you're really counting on him to be kind
of. And he had an ERA over 6 against teams over 500.
Hey, go ahead.
No, just to build on all of that. And that's also just all making the assumption that Dallas Keuchel is supposed to be a starter on this team next year. I said this on Twitter earlier today. He's got a $20 million option for 2023 that vests 160 innings pitched. So it's like, you can't see my face if you're listening right now, but the White Sox are dumb. Are they really that dumb?
They are, because
maybe they are. But, you know, I'll take a sizable chunk out of this hat if they actually have anything close to anything resembling an intention of letting Dallas Keuchel pitch a full year in the rotation next year, whether it's via trade, whether it's via sending him to Mars on Elon Musk's, you know, experimental rocket flight. I don't know. But even pretending that the rotation is full is like, that's barely even a plausible thought exercise right now, you know,
and putting their trust in Michael Kopech. Mm-hmm. That is,
I just don't see that the stamina will work.
Yeah. And even looking into it, like after that thing came out about like, oh, they've, you know, the rotation's full. Like I did look into it, and like we had in 2021, the Rockies were the only team that used 6 pitchers to start games, and everybody else in the league used between 7 and 13. So, I mean, you're going to need more starters than just the 5. Like, it's just going to be a problem. And then one's on an inning limit for sure in Kopech. And then, you know, Dallas is a question mark, and Cease is a question mark, and even Giolito at times is a question mark. Like Lance's health is a question mark. Like
it's good news for Jorge Vera to get his first major league start next year, because the White Sox are clearly not even close to 12 deep. You all know, Zach, particularly you know the White Sox are going to push to the point where Dallas Keuchel has got 159 and a third innings. There's a runner on first, and they're going to let him have that one more batter thinking he's going to strike him out, and it's going to be a double play ball. 2023 Dallas Keuchel.
Of course, that makes him kind of untradeable, too, because that option carries over. It doesn't disappear if he gets traded.
That's true.
That's Gold Glove winner Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah, really. Let's lay some respect on the man. Let's go to another K pitcher who actually does throw a few more K's than Dallas Keuchel, and that's Craig Kimbrel, who again, in what seems like almost a contradictory move to the Rendon decision, perhaps it's certainly a lot of mush mouth type talk from GM Rick Hahn, in that they've talked to Craig Kimbrel, they know where they're at, which I guess means we've talked about the fact that they're going to try to trade him, or they might trade him, or maybe he's going to just be the closer. They're going to use him correctly. They finally actually talked to him and said, hey, how do you want to pitch, Craig? Or maybe we're going to tell Tony not to throw you 3 days in a row, or maybe even 2 days in a row. Zach, thank you. Hat tip on that great piece. Okay, so Craig Kimbrel's back. He's now the White Sox problem to deal with. It's $16 million to have to unload, which clearly I think in any trade, in almost any trade, they're going to have to give away some dough. That's dead money on the books. Let's hope it's not much. Or perhaps best case scenario, I don't know if that's the best case scenario, but he's the closer for 2022 and pitches well because he's used correctly and he's not completely blown and ready to start his countdown to the Hall of Fame. Craig Kimbrel is at least temporarily a Chicago White Sox bullpen cog. Feelings?
My wife, who does not like sports, does not follow them at all, will take time out of her busy day to scream about the closer mystique and how incredibly stupid it is. And I find myself having to agree with her that if a guy just can't get his head into it unless it's the ninth inning and the beginning of the ninth inning and his team is up between one and three runs, he better damn well be perfect. He better be Mariano Rivera or he's useless. He's certainly not worth $16 million.
Yeah. And I think in what you wrote, Zach, in season doesn't necessarily coddle Kimbrel, where it's like, well, he's got to be the ninth inning guy, but it's really more like, just use him correctly. Use him in the first inning, but use him correctly, because that's really the key here. He might not feel that way, but in terms of what the results we should expect are, just don't overwork a guy whose arm is getting a little bit of mileage.
Yeah. I'm going to go on record as thinking that Craig Kimbrel is not going to be on the 2022 White Sox. The calculus of Rodon is not worth $18 million, but Kimbrel is worth $16
million.
The White Sox attempt at PR is basically just kind of lying to our faces, you know? Like, Rick Hahn can say that, and he can say that with a straight face. Do I believe even he's, like, putting those two things next to each other and believing it? Like, was born at night, not last night. Like, he's... Like, come on. That's the problem with the White Sox. They treat us like we're babies, you know.
Four of you believe that maybe, possibly, could be they've actually got a deal kind of done and that's why they did it? That's the only thing I can think of that explains this.
I have no trust in their front office.
Even if they do have a trade in mind, that brings up another issue, because like you have Tapera, free agent, Marshall, free agent. You're trying to trade Kimbrel. You don't know what's up with Crochet yet. Like, is he going to be a starter? Is he going to be the Kopech of next year? Like, so there's a lot of questions in the bullpen too. So we have questions across the pitching staff now, and not a lot of answers. And it feels like at $16 million, even if they have a deal, they either got to eat some of that money, which I know they're not going to like to do that, or they're going to have to give up more prospects when you gave up prospects to get him in the first place.
Lee, my Manny Machado personalized White Sox jersey fuels my answer of no, I do not have confidence there's a deal. Yes, you would. To your question, I certainly hope Hahn has surveyed enough to feel confident there's something where he's not going to just get completely hosed in a deal. But, and it does seem like trading works out better for him maybe than free agency, but 29 teams know the position he's in. I think they might even, you know, read some tweets or follow some of what's being written about the team. It's not going to be a surprise. It's like, hey, wait, we ought to get like 8 million wedge into this deal and maybe downgrade the prospect. You know, these aren't secrets. So I don't know how confident, like Crystal, I don't know how confident I am that there's like something.
I was going to say, it did kind of seem like he was trying to pump up the value of him by saying like, oh, well, maybe we moved him. Maybe we just used him wrong. But like, man, how damning is it to come out and say like, you know what? Maybe we did. Maybe we used him wrong.
Are you sure they weren't? They didn't invite like the Rick Hahn, who's just a season ticket holder in the 500 level to the Zoom. And it wasn't actually Rick Hahn, the GM. He's the guy who makes these calls. Why is he like, maybe we didn't use him right? How complicated is it to say, hey, Tony, I know Tony's the number two in the organization. I got it. But come on, we're really supposed to be like, oh damn, gosh, I hope this year they do it right, man.
Maybe Hahn's gonna be the new Mets GM.
Here's crossed.
Or maybe that guy who's a season ticket holder, the 500 level, named Rick Hahn, is gonna be the next Mets GM. Sorry, all of our Mets White Sox fans out there.
I think that Rick Hahn probably has a seat at the table, but that table is in McDonald's in Maryville, Indiana.
The kids' table. Rick Hahn is still at the kids' table. Oh,
God. I hope he hears that. Because I will double down. It is in Maryville, Indiana. It is a kids' play place. They finally reopened them. That's his seat at the table, and he is eating his Happy Meal.
But that's near the Albinus candy store, so it's not bad.
Yeah, it's right there. He's going to stop and get a little to-go treat on his way home.
Hey, friends, let's take a break. It's a perfect time as we are discussing the geography and topography between Chicago and Indianapolis. To take a break, we'll be right back to discuss a little bit more about Rick Hahn and, oh, I don't know, some other stuff, as much time as we have to do. It's been an entertaining first half. Stick around. Please watch, listen to the second half. We'll be back in a minute. Hey, White Sox fan, minute is up. I said White Sox fan. There's tons of you listening and watching. Come on, you know that. I'm Brett Valentini, hosting Southside Sox Mothership Podcast number 72. Friend to the White Sox, and certainly friend to you, the White Sox fan. We are here during, I don't know, we sort of backed into it, I guess, because we earlier, our last Mothership podcast had to do with the worst games of the season, and we started talking a little bit about Rodon even in that one. And then the Killer Bees came on for a podcast right after that that discussed many of these decisions in detail. And now we're sort of taking the baton from them and continuing that discussion based on, oh, I don't know, not a terrible amount of new information from Rick Hahn. So let's just continue to marinate in the quotes we have gotten from Rick because they've been entertaining, him shouting from the kids' table.
You mean like Zach Collins being a perfectly good backup catcher?
Boom! It is a perfect segue. Lee Allen hits it. You know, the man hosts his own podcast, Sharing Sox. Yes, let's talk about the catching situation, because apparently there's a, I don't know if there's a long-term plan for Zach Collins and Sebi Zavala and you mean Mercedes? But yeah, there were quotes, you know, again, I don't think challenged, but maybe not necessarily spoon-fed, but somewhere in between from whoever was talking to Rick on his invite-only Zoom conference and, you know, prompted him to talk about the catching situation. And again, seemed maybe a little bit handcuffed, also a little bit of that, yeah, they're better than you think. But I'm going to guess we just don't have any renewed confidence in our backup catching core for 2022.
My 11-year-old can frame better than Zach Collins. He might also be able to hit better
and block.
And yeah. And I have a funny little story about that. I was watching a White Sox game with him. Zach Collins was up to bat. And my son was like, you don't like him, do you? And I was like, no, I can't stand him. And then he hit a home run. And my son again was like, what about now? And I was like, no, I can't do it. Those are too rare for me to even say that I like him after that home run.
He said, son, keep watching. You'll see. Keep watching.
You will also be disappointed in him this season.
Yeah, the highlight quote is definitely
I'll be disappointed if he's in the White Sox this season. That'll start it right there. I screamed about this. I mean, Brett, if you listen to our Sharing Sox, I screamed about this all through spring training and in April. we've got to get a backup catcher. I named that Kurt Casale was my favorite, but I had a whole bunch of other favorites. Casale, incidentally, would have been a very excellent choice. This isn't going to work. We got away with it because the AAA AL Central collapsed. We didn't have to play major league teams all year. And so it was just in May, we knew we had the entire division won, and we could put in Collins and we could put in Zavala. And of course, we were in the playoffs such a short time that nobody needed to catch an inning besides Yaz. But I don't think, you know, when I look at the list of the predictions of what free agents are going where, like Correa going to Detroit and that kind of thing, it sounds like there may be some improvement in the division where a couple of them become major league teams. And it would be good at that point. And yeah, Grandal's not getting any younger and he's got his problems. It'd be good at that point to have a backup catcher who can catch, whether it's blocking or framing or throwing people out should the pitchers ever actually look over to first base in the first place. But we may really wish we had one next year, which wasn't a necessity this past season. We just got lucky.
Yeah, the highlight quote that's going around is, you know, Rickon talking about the pitchers or the catchers like kind of being rushed in their development and they got a lot of improvement that they can make still. But the thing that caught me was that he said, like, you know, we're always looking to improve at any position we can, but, you know, catcher is probably not the first target for us in free agency. So like that really kind of reads to me as like, all right, we're going to stick with these guys. We might look on the bargain bin if somebody gets cut around spring training, but like they're not going to make a move or sign somebody. Like they're going to go with these guys as the backup and hope they can be a little bit better in the next year.
Yeah, I don't see that being enough of Rick did not have he had a solid off season. Certainly the way things played out, obviously not with Adam Eaton. So on the offensive addition side, no F, but you know, the hard to argue with Liam Hendricks, even though you wonder how those resources could get allocated otherwise. Certainly the Lance Lynn trade went as good as we could have hoped, even as he was pitching on half a knee by the end of the season. But I'm not sure that we've just seen offseason after offseason of struggle for Rick. And given that there are bigger priorities, right field, second base, I suppose, rotation apparently now has become an even bigger concern. Yeah, it does seem like catching is just going to be like, well, hopefully we can improve the rest of the team enough. And Gavin Sheets will take a big step forward or, you know, who are filling the blank.
Maybe Gavin Sheets can catch.
Yeah, well, you know, he has taken on whatever challenge thrown at him, and he actually seemed to, at least at Charlotte, field right field better than first base. So maybe if he goes to catcher, he'll field catcher better than right field. And well, yeah, it's a bad plan too. But
I mean, Mercedes is a catcher.
But is he retired? It seems like even at the end of the season, there was talk that he had retired again. So not that the White Sox are actually, you know, like losing sleep or breath over it, but he may not even be active. He may just be luxuriating
somewhere. I just saw his Instagram video about an hour ago. And okay. He was playing baseball in what looked like the sandlot. So he's very active still. He catches. I would take him over Zach Gallen.
For the love of the game. In your means 2 months, we did see him hit more than Zach Collins has hit in the entire 4 years we've seen him.
It's true. That's first round draft choice, sure. Zach Collins. Yes. And he can't be, he couldn't possibly, and we didn't even get a chance to see. That was another thing that was very curious about his brief time, his stratospheric rise with the White Sox is one or two innings. It's like, I'm not that you necessarily want to, not you wanted to start his offensive slump by making him catch, but we just, even in junk time, we didn't even get to see him catch to see if like, well, okay.
Maybe his
if
he framing cools. Was better in that one inning than Zach Collins the entire time. That one inning, I was like, man, actually, no, he kind of knows what he's doing.
But Crystal, Zach dances for dubs.
I don't care. I don't care. I only liked Danny Mendick and Dancing for Dubs.
Wow, you don't even like a mental breakdown. Watch out. O'Keefe Jr. Yeah, I'll tell you, do not ask her again. what you like about Zach Collins, because she doesn't even like his dancing. Are we feeling, based on this, is seems to be, I guess, I don't think it's being too negative to say it's sort of inauspicious debut to the postseason. Of course, as Adrian's pointed out, I think in his writing or tweeting or whatnot, you know, it's this might be a longer off season than normal given the labor unrest. So guess what? You got more Bad Vibes podcasts coming, Southside Sox fans. But at least for now, we can pretend everything's gonna be normal. But this is not necessarily the way you want to get out of the gate, where your GM is giving mixed messages. It seems like holes that are just gaping. There's only so much. I mean, let's be clear. A $200 million payroll probably still couldn't really fill all those holes sufficiently. And the White Sox are not going to have a $200 million payroll. So is this rough start sort of like an extension of the ALDS to sour fans?
It's not just the fans. I'm too cheap to subscribe to ESPN Plus, but Will does. And he said that on ESPN, they did not have, now again, these are just prognostications and guesses and whatnot, but they did not have a single of the top 50 free agents going to the White Sox. MLB Trade Rumors, which is a pretty knowledgeable bunch of guys on this stuff. That's what they do. One of their guys had nobody of the top 50 going to the Sox. One had Villar, and one did have Escobar and Conforto. And I saw one other list. Somebody somewhere had did say that Castellanos might go to the Sox. But basically, nobody has any faith that the White Sox are doing anything.
I think the move is, after parsing through like tons of quotes from Rick Hahn today from anybody that actually was invited to the Zoom, it does seem like right field is probably the one that his target. Who his target is, we don't know, but it seems like even though he kind of puffed up Vaughn, Sheets, and Angle again, he seemed the most open to letting in some, like, if we can find somebody in right field, you know, we'll move those kids to DH and let them play there. But like second base, he was all in on Romy and Mendick, and even talk about bringing Caesar back. You know, he's like, hey, no, we're not done. Caesar
coming back.
Maybe Zach Collins can play second.
Yeah, so it really feels like, you know, maybe somebody that's got some positional flexibility in right field. You know, maybe we're going to pay for Chris Bryant after we trade for Kimbrel.
and Zach, let's get right to you, because I know you're a Conforto guy. That seems like a move the Sox would make. And, you know, again, I know you dig him, but that seems like the move they'll make. And that seems like a move that would maybe make you happy, and maybe it'll prove to be good. But we'll say, oh, it seems like, okay, that was this offseason.
Yeah, it seems like that's kind of the ceiling. And going back to what my grievance was several weeks ago, what your comments about Hendricks make me think of is that, you know, the problem with Kimbrel, I think it's useful to remember, is not his $16 million salary. He's probably worth $16 million. It's that, like, Jerry doesn't want to pay that. It's that Jerry doesn't want to pay that and then pay for other things that are going to make the team better. Yeah. I'm actually confident they'll find a trade for him, because there are other teams that are adding payroll that want to win and can use a reliever. That being said, to answer the question bluntly, no, this is not a promising start to the offseason at all. They've given us no indication that they've changed at all. They're going to be they're not showing us that they're going to be happy to do anything else but win 90 games and lose in four games in the ALDS every single year. So until that changes, no, not a good start.
Okay, hot takes. Did the contention window close already?
Yes. This is very much spending like my mom used to say, we've got food at home, when I wanted McDonald's. This is just Rick Hahn saying, we've got food at home because we have Zach Collins and we have Gavin Sheets. And you know what? Yolmer Sanchez is going to come back and he's going to be our utility man. He is back, baby. Like, get that Fame article out now. Like, this is the Rick Hahn saying, we've got food at home. Come have a seat at the dinner table.
There's
a Yolmer, 2016 the emergency style backup catcher when he was on the team.
That's true. Was he was.
When there were two catchers, if it happened that they both got used up for whatever reason, Yolmer was the backup.
Danny Mendick is the emergency catcher now, so Danny can't go anywhere.
Is Rick Khan, I haven't seen him. Is he especially gaunt or is he very hefty now? There's a lot of food themed stuff going on already with Rick Khan. And it, apparently he might be spending a lot of time at McDonald's, Crystal. It's going to be interesting to see how this offseason proceeds. We got a lot of stuff coming up all, you know, listen, we're supposed to be slacking off and doing like a post a day. No, we're doing like five or six, you know, deal with it, people. If it's too much content for you, there's other sites to go visit that will just keep nothing refreshed for you. We are hitting you hard. Deep dive, profiling every single player in the goddamn White Sox organization. I know you're like, who cares about some guy? And you say, oh, okay, well, we do. That guy might, that might be the only article that guy ever gets written about him. I think it's worth doing. We've
go watch Barstool, write pizzas, if that's the content you're craving.
Oh, yeah. And there's, I think there's bikinis too. We have an exclusive Q&A coming up with Rick Khan. Wink. But we are going to continue with our offbeat stuff, including poetry. Oh, yes, the poetry. New products at our Tee Public store. I don't know. I'm looking at Adrian Serrano, but okay, whatever. And we are going to be rolling out some Meet the Player podcasts as well. We're going to get to know some of the newest members of our team joining maybe late or even mid season 2021. A lot of fun stuff to look forward to. Everybody here, thank you for joining as our, I guess this is just an extension of grievances. Adrian, Crystal, Lee, Zach, thanks for this. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, reading, checking us out. This ends Southside Sox Mothership Podcast number 72. We'll catch you at 73.